Our founders understood the importance of manners and civility. Samuel Adams believed that a society's standard of manners indicated whether a nation was on the rise or fall. From the time of his youth, George Washington was schooled in civility. He even dedicated an entire book to Bible-based behavior. What should this mean to Americans today? Have we lost sight of the importance of manners? Join historian David Barton with special guests Glenn Beck, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, and more as they explore the America our founding fathers envisioned. What if America's story is bolder, more colorful, and more compelling than you ever imagined? This is Foundations of Freedom.
Welcome to Foundations of Freedom, where we'll examine important aspects of our common heritage about which most folks today hear absolutely nothing. I have with me today Rick Green. Rick is an attorney. He's a former legislator. He is an author of numerous books. And Rick is also the head of Patriot Academy, which is a great youth program that trains young people for future civil involvement. Rick is also a co-host with me on our National Daily Radio program. Rick, it's good to have you.
Great to be here. Great to cover such incredible topics that most people never even heard of before.
That's
when you
right.
think about foundations of freedom, my mind automatically goes to Constitution, the Bible. Today we're going to talk about civility and manners. Now, that's something most people would not connect to the founding of America.
No, but the founding fathers definitely connected it to the founding of America. It was a big deal for them.
Well, our first question today is really going to set it up because it kind of puts it in perspective on why it's important and how we've gotten away from it today.
It seems to me like people in America think only of themselves. I see it in business and politics and really every arena. People are just selfish. They want to do what they want and they don't care about anyone else. How do we change this?
Man, David, I think about in politics, certainly in the legislature, people do whatever's best for their own career and not what's best for the people. That's the selfishness that the questioner there thinks of, but it does kind of permeate our culture now.
It does, and it's interesting. The simple solution for that that the founders emphasized time and time again is manners. Now, we think of manners as what we teach 2 and 3 year olds, etc., but it's a lot bigger than that. This is Webster's original dictionary. Now, Webster's a founding father. He's responsible for Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 8 of the U.S. Constitution, a big force in the American founding. He was a legislator, a judge, etc.
Just one of those is his dictionary,
well,
or all those together?
Both of those together is his dictionary. This is the first American dictionary. It's a massive project. It took him about 2 decades to do. He learned nearly 30 languages to do this, so it's a massive project by this founding father. But he talks about manners in here, and if you look at his definition of manners, it really is interesting, because the way he defines manners is civility, respectful deportment, in other words, the way you carry yourself. And the reason they're important goes back to a very simple Bible verse. Let me just read this passage out of Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4. It says, regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not look out merely for your own personal interest, but also for the interest of others. And what manners teaches you to do is think about other people first. Oh, no, let me get your chair for you. Oh, no, you please do. Thank you so much. Yes, sir. No, ma'am. This is thinking about others with respect. And when you do that, it keeps you from being selfish. And selfishness is the bane of all governments. Whenever a government turns selfish, people start grabbing, and it's what I want. And that is always the destruction of governments. So it's interesting that founding fathers like Sam Adams said he could look at a country, now tell whether it was on its way up or on its way down, just by the manners of the people in it, because it tells you how much respect there is, how much selfishness there is. Let me read you a couple of his quotes. He says, neither the wisest constitution nor the wisest laws will secure the liberty and happiness of a people whose manners are universally corrupt. Now, first off, he's saying it doesn't matter how good your constitution is. It matters how good your manners are. If you got a great constitution, but you have no respect for each other and you can't control yourself and you don't have civility, that constitution is not going to make you act nice.
It's just paper.
It's just paper.
It's how we live and how we treat each other.
Listen to what else he said. He said, a general dissolution of the principles and manners will more surely overthrow the liberties of America than the whole force of the common enemy.
And most people, I would never have connected the two, that manners are that important to our liberty.
To our liberty.
Even more so
and our happiness.
Than an enemy force.
And that's a big thing from the father of the American Revolution. And this is another one of our biblical foundations. Because if you look at the Bible, it turns out the Bible is the source of most of the manners that we practice. Let me just read some Bible verses and think through this. It says, do not sharply rebuke an older man. Well, that's showing respect for older people.
Yeah.
But rather appeal to him as a father. So now I'm not going to be arrogant and tell you what's right and wrong. I'm going to appeal to you. I'm going to look to you as an authority because of your age. And look to the younger men as brothers, the older women as mothers, and to the younger women as sisters in all purity. Well, that's telling you how to treat all sorts of people.
Yeah.
This one, honor your father and your mother. That's manners, that's ability, the way you treat them. Here's one. You shall stand up before the gray-headed. So when an elder person comes into the room, you shall rise up before the gray-headed. In other words, stand in respect when the elderly person comes and honor the aged. What you do to honor other people, to respect other people, to show civility to other people. And if you can be controlled in that behavior on the inside, you need less government on the outside.
Yeah. So even those simple little things, is that doing those little things, rising, allowing others to go first, it puts your mindset in the attitude of not thinking of yourself,
right,
not being selfish, serving other people, putting other people first. And then that's going to impact the entire culture.
It'll impact
those little things to the big things.
Here's a quote from John Witherspoon, who's signer of the Declaration, founding father. He says, nothing is more certain than that a general corruption of manners makes a people ripe for destruction.
Mm.
That's big stuff. You know, it's not how much your national debt is. It's not how many crime rates you have. It's manners. You lose control of manners, you lose control of your culture.
Yeah.
But that's a downturn of us being considerate of other people.
And I guess it's a slippery slope, right? Because if you start to start little things, it leads into much bigger things that have a big impact on the culture. This next question really hits that head on.
Americans seem so forceful in their opinions, and not just there, but in our behavior, our words, even the tone of our discussions and conversations. I think we're much more combative than cooperative.
David, I'm sure that you have felt the same way when you see some of those videos of an elderly gentleman being treated horribly and people just walking by and doing nothing. Did we slip towards that by beginning with just a lack of manners, and now we're to the point where it's not just not respect? We're physically assaulting people.
Well, when we taught manners, we were teaching people to think of others more highly than themselves. When you stop teaching manners, you start thinking of yourself only.
Yeah.
And when you start thinking of yourself, John Quincy Adams said at that point, you're ruled by the law of the tiger and the shark. It's whoever's got the sharpest teeth or the biggest stick or whoever's got the magazine with the most bullets, they're the rulers, and that's not what you want. You look back to somebody like Harry Truman at the end of World War II. Now, there's a guy who lived through a violent world.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at what he went through with the Japanese side of the war and with the Italian side of the war and all the Axis powers.
All the deaths while he's president of the United States. The Americans saw everything that he dealt with.
That's fine. And he hated the violence.
Yeah.
And so what he did after World War II, he took off on a world tour to see if he could get world leaders to agree to a common basis and he said, if we can agree to this, we'll never again have another war. And he went from nation to nation saying, let's agree to live by the Ten Commandments, and we'll agree to live by the Sermon on the Mount.
Wow.
If we can live by those two things, we'll never have another world war. And he came back from his world tour, and he was really disappointed, and he said, I don't know why I thought world leaders would do it. We can't even get Christians to do it at home.
Oh, wow.
That hurts.
Yeah.
But he's right. Those two things, Ten Commandments and then the Sermon on the Mount. Well, I would take two other teachings, say, for civility. Get away from violence. If you want to go to civility, there's two other teachings you need to know. One is the Golden Rule, and the other is the Good Samaritan.
Yeah.
And if you take the Golden Rule, where Jesus said, do to others as you would want them to do to you. You think about how I would want to be treated, that's why I'm going to treat you. If you do that, then it's easy to be a Good Samaritan. If I'm lying out on the road bleeding and hurt, I'm going to stop and help them.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We inculcated that. These are some early American textbooks. This is the New England Primer, the first textbook ever printed in America, printed in 1690. We used it for 240 years. It teaches kids the Golden Rule. From the very beginning, we talk. And then you have the famous McGuffey readers. The McGuffeys were they went through like 120 million copies. Good Samaritan. We're teaching kids in school the Good Samaritan. And here's Swinton's readers, which came out in the later 1800s after McGuffey's. Same thing. Good Samaritan, Golden Rule. This is what we taught as a culture. And when you do that, the way you look at each other is really significant, and it keeps your nation from sliding into that. It's interesting, that Good Samaritan aspect. If you will walk into the Pennsylvania Hospital today, and that's the first hospital in America, it was founded by Benjamin Franklin. So here's the first healthcare system in America. You walk in, Its logo and its motto shows the Good Samaritan. It says, take care of him, I'll repay thee. Ben Franklin is the one who put that in. If you could have that as the basis of the way you thought about others, it would change your behavior.
Yeah. So those small things have a big impact on the culture. Clearly, we taught that in the schools. You just gave us great evidence of that. We need to be teaching it at home as well. But what are some good examples of how the founders taught those things?
Well, let me first set an attitude, because, you know, we teach our 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds to say please and thank you. No. We need to teach our 45-year-olds and 50-year-olds to say please and thank you and yes, ma'am, and no, sir, and let me open the door. I don't care what age you are, you need to have respect for other people, and manners teaches you to do that. Let me also say, you need to teach it to your kids from the very beginning. They don't know what please or thank you or anything else means, and kids don't normally say, they'll say, yeah, no,
right.
Say, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, say please. Say, make your kids have manners. And you will find such a huge difference as they go through their adolescence, teen years, etc. That respect makes a whole difference because it's self-control. So that's one thing. But the other thing we've got to do to get back to manners is we really have to get back to the Bible. And that seems like a strange thing to say. But I want to take you some quotes of the founding fathers, because they were really conscious into manners and civility. And by the way, their civility was such that we wouldn't know what to do with it today. Let me just give you an example. The Battle of Saratoga is the first major American victory in the American Revolution. We end up capturing 5,000 British soldiers. And manners were such that rather than put them in prisoner of war camps, you know what did the British soldiers? 5,000 of them. We made them give their word that they would not shoot at us anymore. And if they promised not to shoot at us anymore, we let them keep their weapons. And we had a handful of American officers lead 5,000 armed British soldiers back to ships to send them back home, because they gave their word they weren't going to fight anymore.
Wow. So that's a different element of manners. I mean, it must have been so prevalent to both the British and the Americans.
Well, the British didn't quite have the manners that we did, because the Bible was a whole lot more taught in America than it was in Europe. So what you'll find is in America, very Bible-conscious nation, prisoner of war atrocities, Great Britain, pretty high.
Oh, really?
Well, we lost 4,335 soldiers to British bullets in the American Revolution. We lost about 11,400 to British prisoner of war camps.
Which is why, I guess, we didn't do it. We wouldn't treat them the way that they treated us. We treated them the way we wanted to be treated, which is back then.
You know, one of our founding fathers who signed the Declaration is Richard Stockton. And it was his neighbors that caught him and turned him into the British, his loyalist neighbors who were for Great Britain against the American Revolution. And so when the British got him, they put him in a prison ship, Jersey. It was called the Hellhole Jersey, because you just didn't come out of there alive. And so the abuse, the mistreatment, well, he was subject to that. He's a member of Congress. He signed the Declaration. He's part of the Continental Congress.
He's one of our top leaders.
Well, some of his good neighbors found out what was happening, and they let Congress know. They said, do you know you have a congressman over here? He said, do we really? And they found out, sure, he was there. And so they sent word to George Washington, said, you go capture a British general. Once you get him, you start doing to him exactly what they're doing to Stockton. And when they stop on Stockton, you can stop on them. Well, that lasted 2 days. And then the British said, oh, you can have your guy back.
And now we get it.
Yeah, the golden rule kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We don't like being treated that way. So I want to just give you some quotes from founding fathers and what they said about manners and how you get manners. Let me start with somebody really simple. These signers of the Declaration right here, okay? Robert Treat Paine is this guy sitting right here. He's the second guy in. Signer of the Declaration. He's from Massachusetts. He's the Attorney General of Massachusetts. He's on the Supreme Court of Massachusetts. And he was a chaplain during the American Revolution. This is his statement. He said this. He said, I believe the Bible to be the written word of God and to contain in it the whole rule of faith and manners.
So now I get what you were saying earlier, because you said if we want to have a return to manners, we need to study the Bible. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I don't get how those two connect. But Robert Treat Paine saying that's where you get a study of manners. You get it from the Bible.
Yeah.
All of our concepts of how to treat each other come from the Bible.
But most folks who read the Bible, they don't look at it for manners.
Yeah.
But if you look at the Bible in a practical way, say, what can I do with what I just read? You'll find all sorts of manners in there. Let me give you some more. Benjamin Rush. Now, Benjamin Rush, signer of the Declaration, John Adams said he's one of the three most notable founding fathers. Here's what he said. Christianity exerts the most friendly influence upon the morals and manners of mankind. So again, Christianity is the influence. Let me take you to John Hancock. John Hancock, the president of Congress, that big, bold signature. He's also the governor of Massachusetts. In his inaugural address as governor of Massachusetts, he said, manners, by which not only the freedom, but the very existence of republics are greatly affected, manners depend much on public institutions of religion. He said, now, I'm your new chief executive. I want you to know manners, and that's the whole basis of our freedom as a republic. They come from public institutions. If we're going to have manners, you got to connect it to religion.
See, there again, I mean, I've never heard people talk about the republic is based upon how good our manners are. This is a concept that's been...
Give you one more. This guy right here is Abraham Baldwin. Abraham Baldwin is the founder of the University of Georgia. He's a signer of the Constitution. This is what Abraham Baldwin said. He said, a free government can only be happy when the public principle and opinions are properly directed and their manners regulated and correctly shaped. He said, this is an influence beyond the reach of laws and punishments and can be claimed only by religion and education. Laws aren't going to make you good. It's going to be religion that gives you the manners you need.
I'm slow sometimes, but it's starting to sink in because it really is all about how we treat other people.
Yes.
I mean, that's what Jesus told us, too, the two great commandments, right?
Yeah.
Loving the Lord and loving our neighbors, and that's what these guys are saying. If we treat each other with respect, then we can have a limited government. We can have freedom. We can have liberty, but I've never connected that to manners and the way we treat each other. This is huge. It's a big change that needs to happen.
Well, it was so big that if you look back at an education like with George Washington, he was basically self-educated, home-taught. He was not a guy that went to schools or college or anything else. There's only two of Washington's early handwritten school book exercises that are there. And one of those is Rules of Civility and Decent Behavior in Company and Conversation. And it was back from a 1595 French book that was translated into English in 1640. And so Washington, in his exercises, was transcribing these, and he adapted these rules for use in America. And so as he's just a young boy, now I'm talking back really young, 8, 10, whatever, he's come up with 110 rules by which you should live your life. And as he called them, these are the rules of civility and decent behavior. Now, they went through a number of editions. You can go across the years and find Washington's rules of civility were reprinted. And, you know, here's some various editions from various times. This is probably the most recognizable one. Washington's rules of civility. This is something we have at Wall Builders because we think every American needs to know these things. But take the little preteen Washington here. And take some of these rules, and just read the rules, and let me show you Bible verses that go to those rules. Take 22, for example.
Okay, 22nd. Show not yourself glad at the misfortune of another, though he were your enemy.
All right, when somebody that's opposed to you has a fault, don't show yourself glad at it. And Proverbs 24:17, the Bible says, do not rejoice when your enemy falls, and do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles. That's a rule of civility and deportment. Take 34.
All right, 34. It is good manners to prefer them to whom we speak before ourselves.
Okay, so it's good manners to let someone else speak before you do. And this is that thing of putting other people first. So here's Romans 12:10. It says, be kindly affectionate to one another, in honor of giving preference to one another. That's what he just said. Prefer other people before yourself when it comes to speaking. Here's Philippians 2:3. In lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Mm-hmm. So Washington here, this teen, preteen guy is listening out these rules of civility. They're all fine. Governor, mm-hmm. Take 40.
All right, 40. Strive not with your superiors in argument, but always submit your judgment to others with modesty.
Take 1 Timothy 5:1. It says, do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father. And we're told in 2 Timothy 2:24 to be easily entreated, that you don't get stubborn in your opinions. And that's exactly what he just said. When somebody's your superior, don't get stubborn with them and don't strive with them in argument. And that's what it says.
And to submit it with modesty.
With modesty.
So instead of with arrogance saying, this is the way it is, you're with humility saying, this is the way I see it.
Sir, that's right. That's exactly. And that's that easily entreated thing out of 2 Timothy. That, hey, can you help me see it your way? Help explain.
Don't you think if we learn that lesson, that we're actually, more people are going to want to help us?
Oh, yeah.
You
don't polarize as much. And right now, America's polarized. Yeah. It's my opinion is only right.
No,
my opinion is only... There's no iron sharpening.
There's no
iron.
Come let us reason together.
That's
and
right.
Sharpening each other's comments.
And that's manners. I'm willing to listen to you. You know, I recognize that I'm not the smartest guy in the room, and there's some stuff I can learn from you. And, you know, that kind of humility, man, it opens up the Holy Spirit to do all sorts of cool stuff in religion.
And that's the beauty of even the deliberative process. I mean, a legislature, you come in with a bill, having that opportunity to discuss with others and sharpen each other, you end up with a better law at the end of the day than what you started with. Same way in life, you have ideas, go to other people and instead of being dogmatic, I've got all the answers, so let's learn some together. Okay, what's the
take 46.
46. Take all admonitions thankfully in what time or place soever given.
No, wait a minute. Take admonition. If somebody corrects me, I'm to take that thankfully.
I'm supposed to accept criticism thankfully in whatever time or place given.
What world do you live in?
Right.
Let's go Proverbs 12:1. He who hates correction is stupid. Mm. Ooh, that's kind of blunt. Yeah. Ouch. And here's Proverbs 15:5. He who receives correction is prudent. Sounds to me like that's exactly what Washington just said.
Yeah.
See, doesn't that manners and Bible go side by side? Let's go to another one. Take 56.
56. All right. Associate yourself with men of good quality. If you esteem your own reputation, for it is better to be alone than in bad company.
If you esteem yourself with men of good quality, look what it does for your reputation.
Yeah.
And so, take Proverbs 13:20. He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. Now, think about that verse and what Washington just said. That's the same thing. And here's one, 1 Corinthians 15:33. It says, do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. Hang out the wrong people. You pick up the wrong habits. See, and here you got a preteen Washington, 8 to 12, 13, not sure exactly how old he was, but these are the habits by which he is saying, here's how I live my life. And I guarantee you will find that this is the way he lived his life. His enemies and his friends both talked about his deportment, how that he controlled himself, how that he was respectful to everyone. It's a whole different, it's attainable. And that's what I'm saying. You don't have to just teach this to your 2 and 3 year old kids. Teach them
yourself. I was just as I'm reading these, I'm sitting here going, I don't want to learn these. These are things that we all need to implement. And here's many people say the greatest American that ever lived. If this is what led to that kind of life, we all need to be applying this.
Go to 68.
All right.
And by the way, I picked some out here because they're easy to follow.
These are great.
And if somebody wants to have fun, they need to get that book and try to put a Bible verse by every one of those.
Yeah.
Because you'll find that is the rule of men. But let me
just imagine as you're explaining that, I love for our listeners, just imagine your household and your kids and how they treat each other if we are doing
that's
this.
That's right. In your community, and if you're a legislator and your politics and anything you're involved with.
Can I take this home off the set today? Just
absolutely.
Okay.
Look, it'll help your behavior.
Yeah. You said 68, right?
Go to 68.
Go not thither where you know not whether you shall be welcome or not.
In other words, don't show up. That's right.
Give not advice without being asked, and when desired, do it briefly.
So if somebody wants your opinion, give it to them, but give it short.
Yeah.
You don't need to fill
if someone wants your opinion.
If they want it. Speak when spoken to.
Yeah.
Proverbs 25:17 says, seldom set foot in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. Mm. That's exactly what he just said. Don't go anywhere unless you know you're welcome there. And then you have Proverbs 29:11 says, a fool vents all of his feelings, but a wise man holds them back.
That's good.
They say, give an advice without being asked, and wait till they ask, and when they ask you, then keep it short. Go to 69.
If two contend together, take not the part of either unconstrained, and be not obstinate in your own opinion, in things indifferent, be of the major side.
So, where it doesn't matter, just go with the flow. Now, if it does matter, but don't pass by and get in the middle of somebody else's argument. And I like the way he said that. He said, if two contend together, take not the part of either unconstrained. I mean, don't jump in. Proverbs 26:17 says, he who passes by and meddles in a quarrel not his own is like he who takes a dog by the ears. Mm-hmm. Once you get that dog by the ears, and he's really ticked at you, you can't let go and you can't hold on, and that's the wisdom. You also have Proverbs 29:1 where it says, he who hardens his neck will suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. James 3:17. I mean, there's just so many passages. Go to 73 for a moment.
All right, 73. Think before you speak. My wife's always giving me that one. I'm sure there's a Bible verse to back that up, too.
Well, let's get it right now.
Okay, go ahead.
James 1:19. Let every man be swift to hear and slow to speak.
Mm.
There you go.
Pronounce not imperfectly, nor bring out your words too hastily, but orderly and distinctly.
This is Proverbs 29:20. Do you see a man hasty in his words? There's more hope for a fool than for him. So, I mean, we can keep going, but you get the idea.
This is great.
So, this is the kind of manners that they emphasize. And so, what do we do with this now? You know, where do we go?
Yeah, how do we get not only, I mean, obviously we need to apply this, but I see this as something we ought to all be using with our kids, teach them these things. So if we start individually having better manners, that's got to be one of the first steps,
right.
I would think.
Well, first step is read that, because it starts pointing out manners you hadn't even thought of before.
Yeah.
And things you didn't recognize as manners. So I say every individual...
I'll do that. Thank you, David.
Very good. Just walked off the stand.
Yes.
That's exactly right. Next thing I'll say is get the
family... Is that good manners? I don't know. I took that without asking. There's probably something in here about...
Washington's going to have something to tell you about that.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
But the second thing is read the Founders Bible.
Yeah.
Because, for example, we go through that, and in passages like Ephesians 4 and 1 Timothy 5, that's where the Bible spends so much time on manners. And so, see how the Bible applies. I mean, I read all those Bible verses that came out of the Bible.
Yeah.
So, Washington doesn't have the Bible verses with it. That's got the rules, but that's got the Bible verses that go with it, which is the second thing. And then the third thing is, I don't care how old you are, start practicing manners. I don't care if you're 95, start saying yes, ma'am, and no, sir. Even if they're younger than you.
Yeah.
You know, she starts saying that because it makes you think about others. I'm 95, I can do what I want. No. You consider others. You pull out the chair for people. You start standing when a woman enters the room. You take your hat off if you've got a baseball cap or anything else, and you show respect to others. I don't care what age you are, you start doing, you know, I got white hair. And it bothers people at times when people a lot younger than me, I will tell them please and thank you and no and sir. Don't call me sir, you're the old guy. No. I need to do that for my own self.
It catches on, doesn't it?
I mean,
if you start, no matter what your age is, other people around you are going to start saying, wow, that I like that. I'm going to pick that up. I mean, I've seen other people comment on a young person that does say yes or no, sir.
That's right.
They go, oh, I want my kid to do that. And it does grow. So we can turn that around. We can have a restoration of manners, but we got to start with ourselves first. Study that Founders Bible. Those were the two things, right?
That's right. Get that, study the Founders Bible, and then start practicing manners.
Again, returning to those foundations of freedom.
Who would have thought that manners were one of the foundations of freedom?
Thank you for watching Foundations of Freedom. For more information about America's true story, visit lawbuilders.com. You'll find resources like the Founders Bible, David Barton's most significant work. No other book brings together your history, your government, and your Bible in a cherished volume you'll revisit time and again. Reignite your passion for America and your love for the Word of God with the Founders Bible. Visit lawbuilders.com.